and it's all based on fear. But I didn't quite get the words. I think the line in the song is something about programmed for Vietnam, as in, like, the radio is, you know what I mean, is programmed for Vietnam. And I was kind of, what exactly do they mean? And then as soon as, you know, after September 11th, and then we got into, you know, Afghanistan, Iraq, and I was like, Rage Against the Machine, Vietnam. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it was
all that time that the radio was programming the country to just kind of accept that crap. And it's like, I don't know, just when I see stuff like that, you know, a song that, you know, I'm talking about it in 2009, but the song's from 1996, you know, I'm still talking about it in 2009. The song's from 96, which is when I first heard it. And it took me till 2003 to really finally figure it out. That's a good song, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, I do know. And what you're talking about in classical terms is an epiphany.
Yeah. But that Mary Landrieu clip earlier, was she complaining? I was trying to dial in at the time, so I was kind of. You know, everything was kind of sideways at the phones. But was she complaining something about, you know, did she say something about single-payer health care? People think it's a free ride? Or
yeah, people say they want a public option because they think it means it's free.
Well,
that's how stupid we are.
Okay, so she didn't mention single-payer. She was just saying even the public option.
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah, even something as fairly weak as the public option.
Yeah,
you know, A, how nauseating, but B, how insulting.
Yeah, something occurred to me when I heard that. I don't know if anybody's floated this meme out there yet, but and she's supposed to be a Democrat too, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, when these Democrats and you know, obviously these Republicans and whatnot. Always complaining about public options, single payer, health care. I took a half a day off this afternoon, so just my luck, I was able to tune in to Glenn Beck.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I watched it for about 10 minutes and then I went and vomited.
Good for you. Get the poison out of your system.
Yeah, I didn't really, but my brain kind of had to. I think he was talking about the White House, not the press secretary, the woman who,
The director of communications, Anita Dunn?
Yeah. Anita Dunn, he was trying to basically, tar her as a Maoist.
Oh, really? We're up to Maoist now? We've left the generic land of commie?
Yeah. But anyway, so, okay, I'm getting all mixed up. Yeah, my brain's gonna melt, you know what I mean? But anyway, the Mary Landrieu comment, I was listening to that, and I think I might have thought she said single payer was a free ride, because I was trying to call in, and the phone was, you know, beeping in my ear and whatnot, but I obviously should call that, you know, if she thinks that about the public option, then I'm sure Mary Landrieu would say communism or something. But anyway, I don't know if anyone floated this meme out, but the idea popped into my head. Don't people realize we're involved in right now at least two universal single payer wars?
Wow,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because we're all on the hook for it.
Can you call anything else but that?
I don't see how.
And even if you take, you know, just look at the word universal, I guess it's universal. If you're talking about healthcare, a single-payer system is universal, what, because everybody's covered or because everybody pays in, or both? Well, the same thing, I guess it could mean either or both, but, you know, with the war, you know, everybody, we're all paying for it. But even if you want to take that word universal to the next level, you know, both of these wars are supposedly involved, you know, have something to do with the global war on terrorism, which of course is a war on attack, not an enemy.
Right.
So it's never going to end. And in theory, we don't know. There could be space aliens out there. waiting, you know what I mean? They're just waiting to use some terrorism on us. So, you know, why stop at global war on terrorism? It's a universal war on terrorism. So it's a universal single-payer war because we're all paying. But also, you know, in theory, why stop at global war, universal war? And, yeah, so I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I came up with that, or I'm sure somebody else has said it before, but
No, I've never heard that before. I think you get to lay claim to it, Michael.
Okay. Hold on a second. I just want to put that out there. Let me get my Mac to say it. I don't know if this will come across the mic.
Universal single payer war.
Very nice.
So anyway, that was what you know, Democrat Mary Landrieu planted in my brain. But the real reason I called, and then I'll get off, because I'm sure there's a bunch of people, you know, piled up from trying to get through.
Right.
That article that you started, who was that by? Robert Perry, or the author of the article that you were referring to at the beginning of the show? You there, Bob?
Yeah, I'm right here, Michael. Checking the phones. We're still walking gingerly. I apologize.
That's okay.
Please, repeat again. I'm sorry. It's just, well, like I said, an hour ago threw me sideways, and I apologize.
Oh, that's okay. Is it me? Am I breaking up?
Well, no, you're breaking up some, but it's other stuff as well. It's just that I kind of got lost in a couple of different things.
That's okay. Who authored that article that you started the show off?
Oh, that was, yeah, Robert Perry, P-A-R-R-Y. Robert. Yeah, and it's well worth the effort to go to consortiumnews.com with real regularity.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I got you now.
Okay. Yeah, that was actually the real reason that I called in or attempted to call in earlier, just because that kind of struck a few chords with me. In a much more eloquent way than I could ever explain it, that same nerves or the same buttons that I think I kind of tried to touch on with you one time in an email, and then also in a phone conversation I had with you off the air a few months back. Basically, because I I've been listening to The Horn maybe for 2 months now. Prior to that, I had, you know, maybe a 5 month break. And then prior to that, I had been listening for, you know, I don't know, a year or two or... A
couple of years, I think.
A while. But up until about 2 months ago, I had kind of like a five-month break for reasons I won't really get into, just kind of, you know, depression, things like that. I just kind of couldn't really deal with the politics. But you still kind of see it just walking around, passing TVs and stuff like that. So I was kind of living in the mainstream media world for a while. And then, you know, when I came back to The Horn, some nights it was, it just kind of struck me as like, oh my God, everybody's just beating on Obama, and like, you know, I'm not happy with what he's doing either. I think he's going way too slow, blah, 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 blah. But I guess I was just thinking, I don't know, I guess I was just coming from a different, seeing things from a different lens, where the media, by, you know, just scanning the radio or passing by a TV, was just all hating on Obama because he's a socialist, hating on Obama because he's a communist, and all that, you know, that was back when all the teabagger crap was going on.
So, right, right.
You know, it kind of threw me back. Not that I thought, you know, we should give Obama a free ride. I mean, I remember back in 2004 trying to convince friends of mine, co-workers even, to vote for John Kerry, who, you know, maybe really didn't think he was the most charismatic guy in the world. I can't imagine why, but...
Yeah.
But,
I can't either.
But they didn't think he was liberal enough, but, you know, saying, look, you know, let's at least get this guy in, because it's going to be him or Bush. It's going to be him or Bush. Let's at least get this guy in, and then we can hold his feet to the fire. If you get Bush in there, you know.
No feet, no fire.
Right, we're just effed. We're just completely effed. At least if we get Kerry in there, maybe we're effed, maybe we're not. Maybe we can push him, maybe we can't, but at least there's a maybe. So, you know, and I had to think to myself, well, okay, I don't know. It's complicated. I don't want to get into it, but taking that 5 month break from the horn and then coming back to it, it was really an eye opener. I mean, they just go, oh, there's a lot of stuff going on that I'm not hearing about. You know what I mean? It was almost.
Well, that, you know, a classic.
It was almost like the first time I heard. It was almost like, you know, the first time I heard liberal talk radio a couple years ago, or the first time I heard Malloy a couple years ago. You know, even though I had listened to your show for a few years now, taking a few months off and then coming back to it, it kind of threw me back and made me nervous at first. And then I kind of was like, well, okay, I think I get it. You know what I mean? And that Robert Perry article does make a lot of sense because. One thing I think I talked to you about off the air was I got really riled up because some right-wing bully in the break room at my work, the day that a speech to school children.
Right. Yeah, the one my kids didn't get to hear.
Yeah, yeah. I sat there and watched it while I was, you know, eating my yogurt or whatever. And it was just, you know, he delivered it well. That's kind of his thing, delivering a good speech. You know, for the most part, it was pretty vanilla. You know what I mean? It was just, you know, study hard and, you know, inspirational stuff. But, I mean, certainly Bush could never have delivered that speech to school children. You know, I'm not saying it was a good speech for what it was, but I heard not a single iota that could be interpreted as indoctrination or controversial or whatever. But immediately after the speech, this right-wing bully in the break room started talking to another person who works there. I'm not so happy with this president today, da-da-da-da-da-da. And I think I told you off the air, you know, I vocally stood up to the bully and shut him down. Even though I was kind of nervous and shaking because he was dressed, I didn't know who he was, but he was dressed a lot nicer than I was, so he might, you know, I'm sure he was above me. And, you know, you never know when you're putting your job in jeopardy. But, because everyone else in the break, there were other people in the break room, and no one was really agreeing with him. They were just kind of nodding or whatever, and I don't know if the other people were Republicans or Democrats or what, but that just got all over me because it's like, if that's the country we live in, where the media can take something like that and make it into some big frickin' controversy. And then it's not just on TV. It filters down into the workplace or just, you know, the average person interacting with another average person. And you got these situations where people are parroting that kind of crap. And then the other people either agree or they, even worse, quietly disagree. I don't know, maybe I can't draw the dots between these two points, but when I stood up to him because I just thought, this is ridiculous. We have to turn the tide on just the way people think in this country, and like Robert Perry said, get more people to agree with us.
That's never going to happen.
You know what I mean? Because,
it's never going to happen until we get serious about media. It's really,
right,
really not.
I agree with you, and that's why I support the horn, because I, you know, no offense, Bob, it's not you.
Well, I don't want it to be. I don't do that kind of radio where I come on, my friends with half my brain on, with talent on loan from God. Yeah, I can't stand that.
And you know that the way I mean that, Bob, I consider you a personal friend. And I love you, but, you know, I support the horn because of you and all the other voices that I hear, and also because, I don't hear or see anything else. I mean, I know there's a lot of good blogs and radio shows out there, but you know what I mean.
This is radically and entirely different from anything that's going on, if I dare say so myself.
Well, I agree. And I guess I don't know. Maybe this is too much of a stretch, but man, if they can make big damn controversy about a stupid speech telling kids to study hard and call it some kind of socialist indoctrination, how in the hell do we liberals think we're ever going to get single-payer health care? Or get out of Afghanistan, or what have you.
Right, because as much as I love her, and for all the good that she has done, you know, for instance, pointing out the fraud that is that latest coal front organization, I love Rachel Maddow. Keith, I have respect, profound respect for Keith Olbermann. And even Ed Schultz is doing his part. But you know what? Putting three people on the television does not constitute a sea change in media. And no, I understand that it can't all happen at one time, but it's got, there's this attitude that I sense, Michael, where people, you got Rachel and you got Ed and you got it. It ain't enough. And frankly, radio still matters. As much as I resist it, terrestrial radio still matters, where you can't, you know, where there's a list of words you can't say, because words are, I guess, more dangerous than bullets or high explosives going off near people's houses. But it is important, because it's a medium that reaches into people's automobiles, it reaches into people's workspace, office space, home space. And you're right, those ideas are not going to change until such time, Michael, as the people who can write checks on the left realize what you realized easy. And, you know, that's that line from the Robert Perry article that just went all over me. And it was like somebody, you'll say it around here, it got shivers like somebody just walked across my grave, where he said, I've talked to, you know, a leading benefactor of a liberal foundation. Oh, we don't do media. Oh, good. Well, so you intend to keep on doing getting your ass kicked? Because that's what's happening. Michael, I do need to roll along, though, just because things were foreshortened a bit by virtue of the technical screw-ups here. But
sure.
I'm so glad that you called in, and no, it was not your fault. You did not kill the telephones, Michael.
I didn't jinx it. All right. I'll let you...
All right, I promise you didn't. Take care, Michael.
Talk to you later, Bob.
Thanks so much for calling.
Bye.
Bye. Our buddy Michael, Kid A from the chat room. And on the line with us right now is Bill Price. You heard from Bill last night. Bill went to the Army Corps hearing in Pittsburgh this evening. Are you there, Bill?
Yes. Hi, Bob. How are you doing?
Thanks for your patience in waiting. I really appreciate it.
No problem. I just wanted to give your listeners an update from here in Pittsburgh. It's like night and day. And a lot of that has to do with a Colonel Crall, C-R-A-L-L, from the Army Corps office here in the Pittsburgh district, who took firm control of this meeting from the very beginning, saying that he was sworn to the Constitution of the United States, and that included freedom of speech, and he was going to see to it that everybody had it. And we were all going, yes.
Well, were there a lot of coal folks there?
There are a lot of coal folks here. There's about 250 of them. There's about 35 or 40 the environmental activists around Pennsylvania and also northern West Virginia. We have a good, strong contingent of students from West Virginia University up here all making comments. But the coal industry folks, the workers here have been respectful. They have applauded their people. But they have, for the most part, there's been a couple of little hecklers, instances that they were pretty much warned not to do it again, and they have, that. So, it is like night and day, I think mostly because, again, of Colonel Crall, but I also think that they got word, that the negative publicity, of what was happening in, Charleston and what happened in Charleston on Tuesday night, did not work out well for them, so they are being much more respectful to the citizens tonight. And we're able to get our message out that way. And our message is these impacts are significant to the communities. They're significant to the people of Appalachia, including Pennsylvania. This nationwide permitting process does not adequately address those significant impacts. Individualized permits are better. It's a good step toward the abolition of mountaintop removal and other devastating mining, and applauding the Obama administration's efforts to suspend this type of permitting.
Bill, one of the many problems that arose out of Charleston on Tuesday night was the fact that it got turned into a pro-coal rally. And even the coal folks who stood up and spoke didn't address themselves to the issue at hand. Were the coal industry supporters at least able to formulate an opinion about NWP 21 itself?
There's been a lot of discussion here tonight from the coal industry and their miners. And you in the background, one of their speakers has just gotten done. But there's been a lot of talk about the fact that Pennsylvania is not West Virginia, as if, Pennsylvania, and in fact, I haven't checked these facts, but they say that surface mining production in Pennsylvania is down by about 70%. Again, I haven't checked those figures, but they're missing the point. The point is that the suspension of this permit will keep what's happening in West Virginia and in Kentucky and Virginia and in Tennessee from coming to Pennsylvania. Even a small surface mining operation, as they do have here in Pennsylvania, has significant impacts. There's also been a lot of talk about the jobs issue as in West Virginia. And, in fact, many of the speakers have operations in West Virginia, and they come up here to Pittsburgh to speak, which is, again, their right to do so.
Well, and it makes more geographic sense for somebody from Fairmont to go to Pittsburgh than it does to go to Charleston, without a doubt. You mentioned something there, Bill, that is so important for people to understand, and that is, you said small surface mining operations, but am I off base in my assertion that there's no right way to do mountaintop removal?
Oh, there's absolutely no right way to do mountaintop removal. And in Pennsylvania, they do have smaller operations, 30, 50, 60 acres at a time. However, you have to look at the cumulative impacts. And when you take a look at, a 50-acre site that's adjoined by another 50-acre site that's adjoined by another 50-acre site, it doesn't take long until you see vast amounts of Pennsylvania destroyed by surface mining also. And, of course, you know, the other issue here in Pennsylvania is the longwall mining that has, again, significant impacts on the communities and on the water resources of Pennsylvania. It's disingenuous of the coal industry to say, oh, look how good we are here in Pennsylvania, when they're destroying the water resources of the agricultural areas in Southwest PA.
Well, and you know what you're talking there about there is a distinction between destroying something by the ounce or destroying it by the pound. The outcome is still destruction.
The outcome is still destruction. The outcome is still economic ruin for the communities. You know, they were talking, and again, it was pointed out this evening that in Pennsylvania, just as in West Virginia, just as in Kentucky, just as in Virginia, just as in Tennessee, you take a look at the coal mining areas of this state in Pennsylvania, and you will find the highest poverty rate in the highest coal-producing counties. There is a strong correlation between those two factors. And, you know, it's been pointed out, I actually pointed out in my comments, that if they think that the economic prosperity is going to come from the coal industry, then they need to read their history. And they need to see the facts and figures of the counties producing the coal here and in every other coal-producing state.
Bill, why, if you know, why is it that mountaintop removal on a massive scale as we understand it here in West Virginia, why does it seem to stop at the West Virginia-Pennsylvania line?
Well, I think there's a difference in terrain, first of all. So they're able to do surface mining in Pennsylvania and do the backfilling area, much more well, I won't say better, but they're able to do it in a way where they don't need as large of valley fields as they do in West Virginia. A lot of it, I think, though, I will have to say, given, and I have very little experience with the Army Corps permitting process in Pennsylvania, but I tell you this, if they run their permitting program the way this hearing, it is night and day. I wish we had Army Corps colonels running every one of these meetings over the last couple of days, the way Colonel Crowell has ran this one. He has been firm, he has been no nonsense, and he has said he will make sure everybody gets a chance to speak.
Well, thank heaven for that. Have you been in contact with anyone at the Virginia hearing, Bill?
I have not been in contact since they started the hearing. I did talk to some people in Virginia. Prior to the hearing, they had, of course, were getting the same kind of gathering. There was a co-industry people there. So far, things have gone peaceful. I've got calls in to people, Bob, with your phone number out there. They will call in and give you a report from on the ground there.
Okay. If that can happen in the next 19 minutes, that would be great.
Okay. I'll see what I can do about this. Hold on just a minute. Can I help you? Oh, I am so sorry. I am so sorry.
I know you didn't realize.
Thank you. Bob, I've been told I can be heard in the hearing room, so I'm...
Oh, gracious sakes. Well, let's... then we will ring off, but thank you so much, Bill. I do appreciate it.
I will see what I can do, Bob, about getting you something on the ground in Virginia in the next few minutes. But if there was anything significantly damaging down there, I think we would hear about it, but I'll see what I can do. Okay?
All right. Thank you so much, Bill.
Thanks for your time and work and bringing the voices out here to the nation so this story gets told.
It's the very least that can be done on my part, and I tell you what, I'm like I've said before, I'm just proud and honored to be associated with you and all the other folks who were part of this process.
Thank you, Bob. I'm going to get back to the hearing.
All right. Thank you, Bill. Bye now.
Bye.
And that was Bill Price, environmental justice organizer for Appalachia for the Sierra Club, calling live from the Army Corps of Engineers public hearing in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania this evening. Obviously a night and day difference between what went on here in Charleston and here in West Virginia down in Charleston. And I would submit to you that I think Bill's reasoning is correct as to why it's going like it's going. But let me also submit to you the fact that, as I have said, and as Maria Gonneau pointed out, and as Chuck Nelson pointed out, and as Bill pointed out all last night, This is a lawless place. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. Oh, there's plenty of law for some poor idiot who decides to make meth in a hotel bathroom. There's tons of law to be brought to bear against someone if they go ginsenging out of season up on a mountain. But for the guys, for the executives and their workers who blow up every bit of ginseng on an entire mountain, there's no law. Oh, they'll tell you about the regulatory hoops they have to jump through, but the regulators at the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection are rubber stamp artists. And they are, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection is a wholly owned subsidiary of the coal industry. All you gotta do is to go to one SMACRA hearing, Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act, go to one SMACRA 404 permit hearing, and you'll learn that in a hurry. Because it doesn't matter if there's 1,000 people in the room and every one of them comments against the permit goes through. West Virginia is a lawless place. I love it. I adore. I feel a bond with my state that is formed by generations of presence here. But I also recognize its failings, and one of its greatest failings is its attempt at government. This is a lawless place where the people with the money, and that would mean the coal industry, are concerned. And that is the nature of the everyday struggle. Let's keep it rolling with the phones, and hope maybe we'll hear from someone in Virginia as well. Oh, busy signal. Okay. There are about 16 minutes left in the program. That means, about 14 minutes of meaningful conversation if you want to get into the conversation. And I realize it's a little bit tough getting into the flow of things given the technical difficulties that have attended the broadcast this evening. As I mentioned, I am going, I'm getting on the road tomorrow. And I'm going to head for Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Chapel Hill is a very highly spoken of place with lots of good liberal and progressive folks there working on the green economy, working on sustainable farming. There's amazing. There's a place there called the Acme Restaurant that is simply amazing. David in Tennessee recommended it to me the other day, and I just checked out the website, and it was mind-blowing. And it's all tied in with the local, with the eat locally movement that exists there in. Do I have a problem with the phone still? That exists there locally in North Carolina. But once you get outside that little liberal enclave, very like what happens when you get outside the liberal enclave that is Austin, Texas. Then, it doesn't take any time at all for a little bit of baby blue to get drowned out in a sea of absolutely blood red. And the same is true, like I said, of North Carolina. And the phone, we'll go back to the phones in just a second. But I have to tell you about this because it gives me the creeps that this is going on somewhere that I'm headed. And it's a carryover from last night's show. And it has to do with the Amazing Grace Baptist Church in Canton, North Carolina. Brothers and sisters, they've announced that they're going to have them a book burning. Uh-huh. Relying on Acts chapter 19, verses 18 through 20, and this is always a bad thing, relying on the maunderings of a madman like St. Paul. And many that believed came and confessed and shewed their deeds. Many of them also, which used curious arts, brought their books together and burned them before all men. And they counted the price of them and found it 50,000 pieces of silver. So mightily grew the word of God and prevailed. Curious arts, I mean, they was witches. Yeah. So they're going to have them a book burning at the Amazing Grace Baptist Church in Canton, North Carolina. Remember, it was the North Carolina Baptist Church that excommunicated half of its membership because they would not come to the altar and beg forgiveness for having voted for John Kerry. I'm just glad this stuff... Any one of these could have West Virginia for the dateline, but, oh, thank the Flying Spaghetti Monster, it doesn't. This is North Carolina. Ha! What are they going to burn? They're going to burn Good News for Modern Man, a modern translation of the Bible. They're going to burn the Evidence Bible. They're going to burn the New International Version Bible, the Green Bible, the Message Bible, as well as at least seven other versions of the Bible, and they're going to burn them as Satan's Bibles. They're also going to burn Satan's popular books. You know, I looked. I couldn't find I found the Oprah Book Club, but I couldn't find the Satan's Book Club. If you ask this crowd, it's probably no difference. You know, she's a liberal. They're going to burn Satan's popular books. That would be books by Billy Graham, books by Rick Warren. Not really any sense in burning those. They're just throw them in the trash. They're garbage. They are money-making vehicles. They're going to burn the books that have been written by the Pope, or popes. I'm sure if they could get their hands on it and understand it, they would get rid of that encyclical from 1963 real quick that John the 23rd authored. It got him dead in a hurry. And they're going to burn the books of Mother Teresa. All of this because Pastor Mark Grizzard, by the way, this guy, this creep has a 14-member church. Pastor Mark Grizzard said, "I believe the King James Version is God's preserved, inspired, inerrant, and infallible Word of God." You know, all you got to do is go read the Christmas story and you find out that that's a bunch of bull. Because that passage in Luke says where the angels come down and the skies were filled with the heavenly host singing glory to God in the highest and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. The only thing is the heavenly host didn't say that. They said, they said nothing because they didn't exist. But if they did, it was glory to God in the highest and on earth peace to men of goodwill. And anybody who's ever done textual criticism, if you remember years back when we talked with Professor Bart Ehrman, from, oddly enough, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He said, you know, the trick is, all these preachers know this, and they just don't want to let the marks in on the trick. And such is the case with Pastor Mark Grizzard, who knows, and his book burning. But you know what? And I guess this means that I've lost the argument because I'm about to violate Godwin's laws. The people who burned books in the 1930s in Germany started off as a bunch of idiotic drunks in a bar, and there probably weren't more than 14 of them at a time either. And here's the scary part. You know what? There are fundamentalists all over the United States who wish they could be there. Now, one of the things that I love about this article says, a Baptist church near Asheville, North Carolina, is hosting a Halloween book burning to purge the area of Satan's works, which include all non-King James versions of the Bible, popular books by many religious authors, and even country music. Really? Even country music? As if somehow that crosses a line. They seek to destroy Satan's music, and that would be country, rap and rock and soft and easy and southern gospel and contemporary Christian music. David Lynch lives in Asheville, North Carolina, and he said to Raw Story, "You know, it's a little disconcerting how close this is to my home." He went on to say, "They're burning so much stuff, I've dubbed them the hypocritical Christian Taliban. Just the scope of all the information they want to destroy is pretty disturbing." But it's going to be a good time. The website says that the Amazing Grace Baptist Church is going to have barbecue chicken, fried chicken, and all the sides at their book burning. So come for the chicken, stay for the burning. Hallelujah! Praise God! Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Help, I'm stuck in Esperanto, a helium balloon.
Is it too, what?
I'm stuck in an experimental helium balloon.
Then shouldn't you be talking like this?
You heard that story, right?
No.
Oh, my God. Bob, this was the talk of the town for the news channels. Apparently, there was a boy that got stuck in a helium balloon that went up 10,000 feet. And then the news, they worked up the news dials. I mean, like, it was all across the channels, Bob. Everything was on Drudge, front page, everything. And then the word came out that the boy was not found in the basket, so they thought he had dropped 10,000 feet from this experimental flying saucer balloon. By the way, the boy's name is Falcon. I can't make it up.
Oh, was that what I saw going across the screen in the chat room? I was like, what the hell?
Yeah. And the funny thing is, it turned out to be a hoax. These channels spent hour after hour broadcasting this bullshit when all the family had to do was say, we think this is a hoax. We don't think our son was in that helium aircraft. We don't think there's any way. But they didn't. They just kept going on and on. I mean, it went like I think it started at like 1 o'clock or so.
Well, who was dull enough to carry that?
Everybody. It was an interesting hoax because here's the funny thing about it. I don't believe in coincidences. These people are allegedly storm chasers, and they also want to someday track a UFO. And the funny thing is they were on a reality show called Wife Swap. So.
Oh, help me.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I told you about the reality virus. I hate to be cynical, but I can't believe for a second that someone in the family thought that this would be a fun way to advertise their experimental helium, you know, the whole family is an eccentric bunch or whatever. I just thought it was very interesting how that story played out. You would hear the anchors and they would be like, oh, we gotta pray for the kids, pray. We gotta pray that the kid's alright, pray the kid's alright. And you know, then they would talk to the neighbor and I was like, this is ridiculous. And they just...
Well, you know what? I'm really proud of the fact that I have somehow figured out a way to insulate myself against that garbage.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to, I was gonna talk about another story, but that one just popped up in my mind, so I see it's approaching the end. So I guess I would just, please get me out of this experimental balloon powered by helium. I'm stuck up there. It's good reception, though. I can call you from home.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the helium. It helps with the...
And I'm sorry for taking up so much time. I apologize.
What are you talking about?
On the special ritual porn phone.
Oh, okay.
You gave me with the, you know, the special, with the special crest that you put on.
Yes,
to,
yes, absolutely.
The number?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, right.
All right, Bob, you have a nice time at the trip you're going. I hope you have, you make some progress, whatever it is you plan on doing.
Well, I we're just going to get the word out there about what mountaintop removal does to communities and what it does to people. And
I plan on going to an auction myself.
Oh, wow, wonderful.
Make more money for the porn.
Excellent. Hope you find some good stuff.
Oh, I will.
All right. You take care, David.
Later, Bob.
Bye now. That's David calling from Maine. And by the way, if you want to get involved with the Horn Auctions, it's that he's setting up, it's Horn Auction, HORNAUCTION, @gmail.com. And let's try one more phone call before the show's over. Hey, welcome to the program.
Tom. This is Bill McKay. I'm down here at the hearing.
Hey, Bill, good to hear from you, my friend. How's everything going?
Well, it's going reasonably well. Price says you wanted an online report. There's not any overt harassment. There's a lot of booing. There's a lot of discourtesy to the activists. Kathy Selvage and Steve Remy. Both were seriously booed. The Corps commander has not done a good job of keeping the crowd under control. But there's not been any overt harassment. There's been some comments made. There's comments made in the audience individually one-on-one to folks. But nothing real serious. Certainly not to the degree that it had in West Virginia on Tuesday.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. We did just hear from Bill Price, and he was talking about the fact that I guess it's a Colonel Crawl who is running the hearing in Pittsburgh, and he let it be known very early on. He said, I took an oath to defend the Constitution, and one of those is the First Amendment, and everybody here is going to get their opportunity to speak, and that he has run it very, very tightly and made sure that none of that carrying on happened. But while stuff of the scope that happened in Charleston two nights ago isn't happening there in Big Stone Gap, Bill, it's that they are still the coal folks are still being a lot less than polite. Is that fair to say?
That would be fair to say, and from time to time, outright rude, particularly to some of the activists that are known in the community. There have been some just really embarrassing kinds of things. And talking with folks that have come out of the hearing, what the activists have said is that it's just so discouraging that in America, I can't even express my right to speak without being booed.
It is disturbing in the extreme, and it's also, as I've pointed out, it's indicative, I think, Bill, of the lawlessness that attends this lawless process, mountaintop removal.
It is.
Are the coal folks there? You know, one of the things we saw in Charleston was that the coal folks couldn't even be bothered to address the issue at hand, namely NWP 21, Nationwide Permit 21. Are they making any attempt to do that there in Virginia?
They have talking points that they're using. Many of the speakers are just repeating the talking points. They're a little bit off message, but from what I understand about what happened in Charleston, it's much closer to what the real issue is. There's still a lot of it's all about jobs, that you're going to shut the industry down and crash the economy if Nationwide 21 permit is done away with. There's very little understanding, or appears to be very little understanding, for many of the people. They're scared for their jobs. They're scared for feeding their families, and you can appreciate how that could be fed by self-serving coal-type PR people that have a particular message they want to get out there, and they're using it.
Oh, without a doubt. But, there is a difference between Virginia and West Virginia. West Virginia is clearly a mono-economy, Bill. Virginia does have economic diversification. How realistically can they make that claim of, you're going to destroy Virginia if you end mountaintop removal?
Well, you can't hold it true for Virginia, but you certainly could hold it true for the coal fields of Virginia.
And Big Stone Gap, where you are, is right in the heart of it, right?
Right in the heart of the coal fields. Wise County is the first or second leading producer of coal in the state. And there are upwards of 4,000 jobs in this area that are direct employment jobs. So it has a major impact. It wouldn't be fair not to say it did in this part of the state. For the rest of the state, that's not true.
Well, Bill, thank you very much for taking time. Thanks for taking time to call in. And please pass my regards and thanks not just to yourself, but to Kathy Selvidge and the other folks who showed up to give voice to the future. It takes a lot of guts to do something like that.
Yeah, we appreciate the opportunity, and I'll certainly pass your message along.
I appreciate it. Bill McCabe, thank you very, very much, sir.
Okay.
All right. Bye now. Bill McCabe calling live from Big Stone Gap, Virginia, to update us on the NWP 21, the Army Corps of Engineers permit hearing taking place there. Not the reasonable event that Bill Price described from Pittsburgh, but it sounds like a far cry from the mob scene, the mob rule that took place in Charleston on Tuesday. And again, if your representative has signed on to H.R. 1310 or your senator to S-696, call them and thank them. Email them and thank them. If they haven't, urge them to do so. And in either instance, let them know that this lawlessness This lawlessness that has been allowed to run rampant in Appalachia must end. And a final note, I'm a couple of minutes over, so my apologies. But a final note, please, if you have not, go to brighterplanet.com. Brighterplanet.com. Click on the Project Fund tab and register and get your three votes for sustainable energy and economic diversification in the Coal River Valley. Voting will go on for another 3 hours or so, and the seed project in Rock Creek, West Virginia, is only up by about 92 votes. And we really need to put this thing out of reach so that that $5,000 grant can go and do the much-needed work that has to be done down in Rock Creek. Please, and tell your friends and neighbors. Thanks, everybody, for participating in the program this evening. I'm sorry about the technical difficulties. My regrets for not being here tomorrow night. But be back Monday. Don't forget the weekend schedule, Rick's Place, Rick Smith, and 9 p.m. Eastern Time Sunday night, all foxed up with John Fox. Thanks to John Fox. He's our chief engineer. He's a host in his own right. He is a web designer, webmaster, and musician. What isn't John Fox, and how we do value him? Thanks to the moderators in the chat room, Lottie, Sue. Thanks to the news ninjas, Gene and Susan, to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thank you to every one of you who continue to make this experiment in media a continuing effort. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing, and it is cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And welcome to this Thursday night edition. It's a little bit weird for me to be here, this being a Thursday and all, but because of illness, Berg's eighth grade football season was cut short, I'm afraid, and he was unable to finish the season. He's bummed out, I'm bummed out, we're all bummed out, but he was forbidden from further play until it's exactly sorted out what in the world this is that he has. Whether it's Smithfield flu, or now they're talking maybe mono, or, what's the other one? Epstein-Barr. But he is not a well camper. and we're just trying to slog our way through the medical miracle that is the American healthcare system to try to get some sort of a cogent answer. So I'm here on a Thursday. The downside is that I will not be here on Friday, so no Front Porch Friday tomorrow evening unless I get down to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, in a real hurry. Not even sure how long it's going to take me to get there. But I'll be jumping in the truck and driving down. And I don't know, I'll take the gig rig with me, and if stuff works out really, really well, I'll do a show. Figure out some way or another, we hope. And maybe even use Skype to take phone calls. You know, sort of John Fox style. So this is it for the week, unless something changes to change my schedule and keeps me home tomorrow. This is it for the week. And, you know, tomorrow, I kind of hate to say it, but this is a really good weekend to not be around here. Because Saturday will be an absolute mob scene. Saturday is, of course, Bridge Day here in Fayette County, the largest single-day festival in the state of West Virginia. The thrill-seeking folks will go out to the middle of the New River Gorge Bridge and pay a certain amount of money to get to jump off of same. Parachutes are required. It's called base jumping. Some of you may be familiar with it. You know what? I've never seen a perfectly good bridge that I had an urge to jump off of, or a perfectly good plane that I had an urge to jump out of. But it is, it can be a real claustrophobic event, because when you get 100,000 people out on two lanes of a mile-long bridge, it can get a little nerve-wracking. It can get a little bit scary, in fact. But it's a big, big, big tourist event here in Fayette County. Friday evening will be the Taste of Bridge Day, which we would be at one way or the other tomorrow evening, so there wouldn't be a Front Porch Friday tomorrow night anyway. That's something the family's done for years, and I will be breaking the tradition in order to go and spread the word about mountaintop removal in Chapel Hill. What's going on down there is the Carolinas power shift, trying to raise awareness about what coal, the ignition, the combustion, the burning of coal is doing to our climate, to our communities, and to our future. I will be focused on what mountaintop removal does to communities around here as well as to communities downstream. So cross your fingers. I don't know. Maybe we'll I'll take video, and maybe we'll get some video loaded up onto YouTube, and maybe that will so you can see what was going on. So that's the weekend. I'll be back on Sunday, and then the regular week will kick in the following Monday. And just by way of mentioning this at the top of the program, and you're probably, I hope you're not tired of hearing about this, because you guys have been such a big part of this project, and because, you know, I can sit there and refresh the page and see see you going and numbers rising. I've been telling you about sustainable energy and economic diversification in the Coal River Valley at brighterplanet.com. brighterplanet.com, just like it sounds, brighterplanet.com. Under the Project Fund tab, there is a $5,000 grant competition underway. And in the lead at present is sustainable energy and economic diversification in the Coal River Valley. It has 3,854 votes. The Green Light 1,500,000 project, reducing carbon and building community in New Orleans, is in second place with 3,788 votes. Voting ends I'm guessing midnight, well, voting ends today, and I'm guessing the deadline would be midnight in one of the time zones, or midnight in each time zone. I don't know how they're handling it. But, let's see, that's 54, 64, we have a 66 vote margin. Which means, with the three votes available per registrant, that's just a few votes. So if you have not gone and registered at brighterplanet.com and voted for the SEED program in the Coal River Valley, Sustainable Energy and Economic Diversification, please do so. As I've said before, this costs nothing. It's easy to do, and I've heard from a lot of you that you have gone and done it. But, you know, as I also said, tell your friends and neighbors if you haven't already. Tell them that they can be part of building a just and sustainable future in southern West Virginia, a land that has been abused, well, since John Peter Sally first noticed that there was coal there. And that was, what, 1748? Yeah, white folks had barely gotten a toehold in the Coal River Valley when John Peter Sally said, damn, there's a bunch of coal around here. And slowly and inexorably, hell and damnation came to central Appalachia. And so it seems only fitting that the idea of sustainable energy and economic diversification in the 21st century, the transition away from the toxins and the miseries that have attended coal, would have its genesis in that same Coal River Valley where John Peter Sally first discovered coal in the 18th century. Less than 100 votes separate first and second place. So, by all means, if you have not, go to brighterplanet.com, brighterplanet.com, and cast your three votes and help put this thing squarely in the pocket of the folks who have put forward the idea of the Sustainable Energy and Economic Diversification Program in the Coal River Valley. That $5,000 will go a long way toward creating the project. The grant has been authored by Andrew Munn, who is one of the student volunteers with Coal River Mountain Watch, who sponsors this program and has helped keep the horn on the air for almost 2 years now. So it's a way of indirectly giving back for what Coal River Mountain Watch does to keep this channel of communication open. And an update from, and I see him, is he still in the chat room? Are you still there? Yeah, I see Guy James is still in the chat room, and he tells me that hell or high water, he will be back behind the microphone come Tuesday. So everybody gather round your computer speakers on Tuesday, because I got a feeling that my colleague, my friend, my broadcasting compadre, Guy James, will come out of the gates, six guns a-blazing, and raring to go. Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Is that everything? Well, no, that's not everything. Don't forget the weekend schedule. I'm used to doing some of this stuff on Friday, but it's Thursday. Don't forget the weekend schedule. We have both of our Ricks on the weekend. We have Rick's Place with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, who is simply a delight to listen to. If you've never tuned in, Rick, his first run comes at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday evening. The first run of Rick Smith's show out of Pennsylvania comes at about 5:15, 5:20 on that same Saturday evening, and then they just roll through and they repeat over the course of the weekend until 9 p.m. Sunday night. Make a point, if you never have, make a point of catching Rick Goodner. As I said, he's a delight. He is simply a delight to listen to. He has no tolerance, no he passed his right wing tolerance threshold a long time ago, and it's apparent when you hear it. And he peels wing nuts like grapes. And living in Texas, he has so many of them all to himself. And as I've said before, sometimes it's enough to make a fella jealous. So, Rick's Place, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday night, and then rotating thereafter. And Rick's, just a word about Rick Smith. Rick Smith walks the walk and talks the talk. Rick Smith is a union truck driver, and he hosts a program that runs on terrestrial radio in Pennsylvania, in central Pennsylvania. And I think he said it on the air one night, and I know he said it on his show. You know, Pennsylvania is Philadelphia in the east and Pittsburgh in the west and Alabama in the middle. Rick is operating in the Alabama part. And, you know, it's almost like there's a common thread here. Guy James is in the middle of the worst of the red part of Florida. I mean, where Guy James is blood red, and he's still there. 8 years he's been behind the microphone, broadcasting facts, sharing facts, resisting. You know what Guy says is, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. And Guy's been speaking that for almost a decade now, from literally the belly of the beast. Rick Goodner, you don't get no redder than Texas. But Rick Goodner is speaking his truth from the belly of the beast. Rick Smith is speaking his truth from the belly of the beast. If you were listening last night to this program and you heard the screaming coal mobs in Charleston, you know that we have more than a scratching behind the ears relationship with that self-same beast. Right-wing, ignorant, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking freaks. In this case, mountain removers in the coal quarries that are killing this region. And then, well, then there's John Fox in what we have all perceived to be a liberal oasis down in Australia. But even John has the right-wing beast even galumphs a little bit around down there. So that's that, and John comes your way 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Sunday night. But consider for a moment, if you will, and it was commented on a couple of nights ago, how good it is to hear southern voices, and it don't get no more south than Australia, you know? He's got me, he's got Guy, he's got Rick Goodner, he got us all licked. Yeah, the only guy that could get any further south than John would be if we happened to have an affiliate in Tierra del Fuego or perhaps Ice Station Zebra on the Antarctic mainland. But we definitely have a southern exposure, shall we say. And perhaps we are so decidedly liberal, my colleagues and I, because of where we live and because of what we see on a daily basis. And maybe, just maybe, that makes what happens here at the Horn just a smidgen more real. And by more real, I mean more, a little closer to the bone, a little closer to home. Not saying better. You know, we share that southern locus with our good friend and colleague Mike Malloy. And being in the South and being a liberal will make you, you know, there's no such thing as an undecided liberal or a wishy-washy liberal in the South. If you've ever heard our good friend Matt Osborne call in from Alabama, the host of Osborne Inc., OSBORNEINK.com, if you've ever read his postings either there or at Huffington Post, you know that he takes no prisoners either. And, you know, there's something to be learned from that. For everyone else who is demonized as, you know, liberal, for instance, I noted on Bart Cop's page the other day, you know, which is just a daily must read. Bart Cop more or less created the liberal blogosphere. I mean, if you've ever heard the lead up toward New Year's to the New Year's football games and the bowl games, and then at 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon of New Year's Day, it'll be the Rose Bowl, the granddaddy of them all. Bart Cop is the granddaddy of them all in the liberal blogosphere. He was doing this when there was no such thing as a browser. He started this out on one of those early services. I can't remember which one it was. I can't even remember the names of them. But his page started out as something called Rush Limbaugh Lying Nazi Whore. And that was over 10 years ago. Can you imagine? Over 10 years ago. And he has been going at him hammer and tongs ever since. His page and his radio show, it's a subscription-based radio show, but it is worth the effort because, and frankly, I would love to hear Bart go live sometime and actually interact with folks live in real time. It would be so cool, because he's a joy. But anyway, I noticed a story on Bart Cop's page, I guess it was yesterday, where he was referring to the fact that Harry Reid, Senate Majority Leader, that bold man of vision and tireless strong armor of causes in the Senate, not that he's in real trouble with both of his Republican opponent, both of the Republicans running for the primary nomination in Nevada. And the only thing that struck my mind was to think, you know what? Here's the funny part. I'll bet you, and, you know, our pal Garrett out in Vegas, I'll bet you Garrett could verify that the Republicans are calling him a liberal. You know, just because in the Republican mindset, anything an inch to the left of Mussolini is liberal! Godless, America-hating, French cheese-eating, wine-drinking surrender monkeys. What do you want to bet? Now, you won't take it because you know I'm right. What do you want to bet? The right-wingers running against Harry Reid are referring to liberal Harry Reid. Sunshine, they ain't never met a liberal if they think he's one. And that's, you know, I guess that's the problem. Is that, you know, first we let them take the word away and make it dirty. And then we let the right wing define what constitutes liberal. And they define it excellently and broadly, and not excellent in terms of quality, but excellent in terms of effect. They define liberalism broadly, the right wing does, as anything that's not them. Bear in mind, odious as it may sound, to today's right wing, whether it be John Boehner or Mitch McConnell or Newt Gingrich, bear in mind that Richard Nixon would be a liberal, that Dwight D. Eisenhower would be a liberal, that Barry Goldwater, you know, conscience of a conservative, Barry Goldwater, you know, in your heart you know he's right, but in your guts you know he's nuts, Barry Goldwater, he would be a liberal to the right wing today. And it is that persistent willingness on our side, not on our part, because none of us would tolerate it, you know. You want to call me a liberal? Yell it louder, dumbass. And then I'll make you eat it. Because liberal is good. Liberal has a lot more going for it than conservative, simply by definition, any day of the week. And just by way of putting a little history out there for your perusal, I got an email of an article today from our pal the Cossack, and I went and read it, and it is an article by Robert Perry over at consortiumnews.com. And Robert Perry was doing, just by way of history, Robert Perry was doing history, journalism when journalism actually existed. That's how long he's been at it. He was one of the people who uncovered a lot of the filth that should have led to the impeachment and removal from office of Ronnie Reagan. Curiously, another man with a middle initial W. Jesus, you would have thought that was a warning to us all. But it is a fascinating article. The title, and it was published yesterday at consortiumnews.com, C-O-N-S-O-R-T-I-U-M, news.com, consortiumnews.com. Robert Perry published this yesterday. It is titled Obama and the Left's Old Schism. All right, pervs, I said schism. Stop it. And what he does very effectively in relatively few words is to trace the history of the session, or the seeding. Wow, I can't come up with a word that isn't a homonym with something else so that it makes sense. He traces the history of the left's abandonment of the media to the tender mercies of the right wing. And he opens the article by talking about the fact that, you know, there's no pleasing some people. There's some people that if you say a harsh word about Barack Obama, you'll get hate mail, or if you don't say bad things about Barack Obama, you'll get hate mail, and both people sending you hate mail will say that they are liberals. He says, for instance, many progressives feel that an elected Democrat, especially a relatively progressive one like Obama, simply should do the right thing. Oh dear, that sounds like me. You know, that's my old, you know, my old mantra. If you would not be evil, you must first stop doing evil. You know, things like the Afghanistan war, Iraq, you know, end it. Mr. Perry writes, if Obama falls short by making compromises with the Washington power structure or by judging that the broad American public might judge his actions as too liberal, these progressives see it as their duty to condemn him. Others from this purist wing talk about putting pressure on Obama from the left to make him change his behavior. I think we talked about that too, haven't we? And they threaten to sit out elections or vote for third-party candidates if Obama or some other Democrat doesn't live up to expectations. He then notes, however, another branch of progressives, let's call them pragmatists, recognize the daunting challenges that a liberal politician faces in the United States because the right has built such a powerful propaganda apparatus dominating the message reaching the American people through newspapers, magazines, books, cable TV, talk radio, and the Internet. When a liberal politician also has to deal with careerist mainstream journalists, that's a note to Robert Perry, that's a for-profit journalist, who bend to the right for self-protection, think CNN, pragmatic progressives agree that it is unrealistic to expect perfection from someone trying to advance a reformist agenda and maybe win the next election. We've also put that argument forward, you and I and all of us together on this program and on this network. And Robert Perry says, these conflicting viewpoints represent a schism on the left that can be traced back at least four decades to election 1968. And then he proceeds with the history lesson. And it's a, of course, it's a horrifying lesson, and it's one that, as you read it, if there, it's just that you can't read it and not scream, Sherman! Sherman! Set the Wayback Machine for Let's Unscrew Ourselves! Sherman? No Sherman. But he lays out exactly what happened as the right, as the left abandoned any control of the media, and the right filled in the vacuum and changed America forever because they got it and we didn't. He says, in the 1970s, the left had held the upper hand over the right on media with a vibrant underground press appealing to the Vietnam War generation. Outlets like Ramparts Magazine and Dispatch News broke important national security stories. Radio stations like WBCN in Boston broadcast news on anti-war demonstrations. The so-called alternative press was alive and well. And then there's a however, and this is an important however. However, with the Vietnam War over and the mainstream press undergoing a brief awakening and exposing serious wrongdoing like Watergate and the Pentagon Papers, principal... Ding, 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 ding. Click the button that says bold for this one. And italics and underline. Little lightning bolts and smiley faces, everything. However, with the Vietnam War over and the mainstream press undergoing a brief awakening and exposing serious wrongdoing like Watergate and the Pentagon Papers, principal funders on the left decided that media was no longer a priority. Well, my friend, our job is done, they said, and this is me, not Robert Perry, they said, dusting off their hands. We have prevailed. Let us now leave the nation in, you get the idea. But the job is never done. He continues, many key outlets like Ramparts and Dispatch News were shuttered. Others like WBCN were sold off to mainstream corporations. Some key left-of-center opinion magazines fell into the hands of neocons or conservatives. For instance, The New Republic was purchased by neocon Martin Peretz, who staffed it with neocon and right-wing writers like Charles Krauthammer and Fred Barnes. You ever wonder where they got their start? There you go. He references the fact that in 1982, South Korean theocrat Sun Myung-moon started a brand new paper in Washington, D.C. that hemorrhages money to this day. It's called the Washington Times. And the Washington Times has been a faithful lapdog of the Republican Party ever since. Perry also notes that right-wing money went into attack groups, too, targeting mainstream journalists who refused to toe the Reagan propaganda lines. And he notes that, among other things, during the Reagan administration, as far back as 1983, you remember when the right wing threw such a hissy fit? My friend Bill Clinton is selling the Lincoln bedroom in the White House to the highest bidder. He's been doing fundraisers by letting people stay in the Lincoln bedroom, my friends. Remember that? I remember that. I've still got the scars on the brain cells to prove it, as you can hear. Well, it turns out that one National Security Council memo dated May 20th, 1983, described U.S. Information Agency Director Charles Wick, employee of the government, bringing private donors to the White House Situation Room. Not the Lincoln bedroom, sunshine, the Situation Room, where the balloon goes up. Ah, you can't let them in here. They'll see the big board. They'll see everything. For a fundraiser that collected $400,000 for accuracy in media and other pro-Reagan propaganda fronts. Any time you hear a right-winger having a hissy about something that the liberals have done, I think it's probably apropos that one ask oneself and start using the Google or the Bling or the Bing or the Bob Hope or whatever, use one of the to look up when it was before this ever happened that the right wing's complaining about, that the right wing did that very thing themselves. I will defer, as I often do, to horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, but I think the psychological phenomenon is known as transference. Is it? Rick, if you're listening, is it that thing where you complain about character traits and actions of another that you recognize because they are glaringly obvious in your own little universe? Hence, because they had sold the White House like not so cheap tricks, because they had prostituted the honor of the White House, the right wing was right there to jump on the Clinton administration. Oh, Jesus, they're having coffee in the Lincoln bedroom. What would Lincoln think? Political corruption's what it is. Yeah, harumph. I didn't get a harumph out of that guy. Harumph. Perry goes on and says, besides avoiding the controversies that sometimes sprang from backing media, wealthy liberals found they could reap positive public relations from contributing to worthy causes. They might even collect a Humanitarian of the Year award at a black tie banquet. Oh my God, did you hear? Winthrop just won the Humanitarian of the Year award. We must go to the rubber chicken dinner.
Oh, do let's.
Perry writes, by the end of the 12-year Reagan-Bush 41 reign, the right had assembled an impressive media arsenal, and the left continued its unilateral disarmament. And it's good to see that Robert Perry has had the same experiences that folks like Guy James and I have had, and our buddy Boss Man Wayne. Because Robert Perry writes, when I approached a number of liberal foundations in the early 1990s about this worsening media imbalance, I was told by one smug foundation bureaucrat, oh, we don't do media. Perry says that attitude didn't even change when the Republicans rode their powerful media advantage to their revolution in 1994. The incoming GOP majority in the House of Representatives made talk show host Rush Limbaugh an honorary member for his work as National Precinct Chairman. But many progressives simply blamed Clinton. Dear God, I remember those years. I remember the first day he came on air after the Republicans had won that majority in 1994, and the voiceover to his program began that day, and it did every day. America, the way it ought to be. And Robert Perry goes on to discuss some of the Nader-Democrat dichotomy from 2000. And he finally closes by saying, my main point now when it comes to Obama, however, is this. Not that he shouldn't be criticized when he does the wrong thing, but that the only practical way for progressives to get a politician to act more to their liking is to persuade more of the country to agree with their positions. Very simple statement, but God, does that thing have some heft. The only practical way for progressives to get a politician to act more to their liking is to persuade more of the country to agree with their positions. Think about that. Now, how are you going to do it when you have completely left the field and you're not even competing with the right wing in the media? Perry continues, that work is not solely the responsibility of politicians. Even an orator as gifted as Obama. The fact is that politicians and mainstream journalists are going to be braver if they feel there is a chance to both succeed and survive. But those odds to be raised, and this is another one, get your little highlighter out and put stars and moons and clovers and new blue diamonds around it. They're always after me, Lucky Charms. For those odds to be raised, the American left, especially progressives with serious money, need to reevaluate what the past three decades of neglecting media has wrought. Today's potent right-wing news media has tilted the nation in favor of neocon wars and ultra-free market economic policies. As this summer's angry healthcare town hall showed, the rights media, led by Fox News and talk radio, can be used to popularize right-wing arguments and bring out people to rallies, much as WBCN and other left-wing media outlets did over the Vietnam War nearly 40 years ago. Last I checked, that's a generation. If Obama and other Democrats sense that there are strong voices challenging the right-wing echo chamber today, they are more likely to stand up for principles. And that newfound courage may go a long way towards closing the four-decade schism between the purists and the pragmatists. I don't think I have seen any better distillation of the media problem faced by the media problem faced by our side ever. And of course, at the same time, still out there are those groups, those liberals who say, oh, we don't do media. So spend some time with that article. Go to consortiumnews.com and just sort of let this thing percolate with you. Because the amazing thing is that while you while we sit here night after night and you continue to support the horn, those same smug folks that call themselves liberals say, "Oh, we don't do media," and they don't, and they won't, and I don't know what turns the light on for them. But I hope to God that something does. So there aren't any, there's no big foundation money out there to support. Because you know what? Lots of people slammed the door, as I was told personally, lots of people slammed the door in the Drobny's faces when Nova M was a going concern. I think lots of supposedly big-time moneyed liberals slammed the door in Air America's faces, to the point that Air America goes a little more to the right every day. It's not just us. It is a pernicious, pervasive attitude that allows the right wing to get away with damn near anything they want. You know, one of the great resources for this program is thinkprogress.org. They have a nose for great stories. And they get them up in a hurry. And it's a great blog, but it's a great resource. But there aren't enough people who can use that resource behind a microphone or in front of a television camera. And therein lies the rub. So as we sit here on this Thursday evening, the 15th of October, realize what you have done. Realize what you are doing. This is not a pitch. This is a pat on the back. Jesus, this is a big hug. Minus the 12-pack of beer and the lampshade on my head. This is the, I love you, man! Because we do. Because with what you have, with what is so hard for you to come by, you share of it to keep this going, to keep this effort alive, to keep the holes plugged in the canoe until we can build a better boat, to keep oxygen pumping into the body until we can get up to fully healthy and walking on our own. You do this. My God, there are people who call themselves liberals out there who have enough money to burn a soaking wet elephant and never see a percentage change in the principal in the bank account. They don't do it. You do. You go to work every day. And you share. Because this is worth having. It is worth keeping. You may even be disabled from being able to work. And you still dig in and share what you can to keep this going. Not for us, not for yourself alone, but for all of us together. And I just felt like when Cossack sent me this article, I sort of knew that I had to focus on it to show that it's not just us here at the Horn talking about this. It is a greater reality that is recognized in the larger world of what is left of liberal journalism and liberal media. And with the crisis that we have faced, and the fact that we have averted that crisis, I had to lay that out there that Robert Perry penned so well, or maybe he electroned it now since it's 2009. But following that, I had to point out what an amazement and what a wonder you are. And what an honor it is to work with you and for you. As we go forward with the Horn. Because you know what? If you want to think of the liberal money out there that isn't flowing into anybody in media, if you want to think of them as generals sitting on their blessed assurance while grunts in the trenches fight it out, well, then it reminds me of Henry V. Don't ask for more. Because the fewer of us, the greater share of the honor. We few, we happy few, we band of brothers and sisters, you have done what the people who consider themselves to be the really smart ones, you have done what the smart ones didn't turn out to be quite smart enough to do themselves. And that is the sort of thing, I hope it does for you what it does for me, because I'm giving myself chills just describing this. You, by your own determination, have made sure that there is a little redoubt of liberal commentary, liberal opinion, some liberal journalism, and that you won't let it fail, and you won't let it falter, and you won't let it die. And that's what makes it possible to continue this effort, no matter how frustrating. The ongoing attempt to get to stay at it can be. And I say all of this because a week from tomorrow, a week from Saturday, I ain't no good at math. A week from Saturday, I will be stunned. It will be a stunning day. We won't be on the air because it's Saturday. But a week from Saturday, the horn will officially turn 4 years old. And that's just since we lit it up in this studio here. We're actually older than that. Guy James started doing what Guy James has been doing so well for so long before Air America was even a thought. I started doing what I was doing on local terrestrial radio and Ben streamed it out to the wider world before Air America went on the air. But this incarnation, this manifestation, will be 4 years old a week from Saturday. And that amazes me. And it thrills me. And it creates in me a sense of deep honor and deep appreciation that is almost inexpressible. And all of that goes to you. For your determination that there be a second birthday, a third birthday, and now a fourth birthday. And so, as we say happy birthday, it won't just be happy birthday to the horn. It will be happy birthday to you, too. So I just wanted to get that out there. Kind of wondering why the phone wasn't ringing. It's usually four or five lines lit up by now. I'm finding out that maybe we don't have the phones have decided to go go sideways on us. Let me check this real quick. That's dial tone. Okay, so maybe a break is called for, and we'll try to sort this out. And you know the phone number. Check it. Check and see if the lines are working, if you've got something you want to say, something that's on your mind, stories that have grabbed your attention. This is your last chance until Conversation Radio kicks back up Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time with All Foxed Up and John Fox. If you don't have Skype, load it on your machine so you can call and talk with John. He has to use Skype these days because of technical difficulties that have been beyond our control and beyond the control of our providers. It's just, it's the damnedest thing we've ever dealt with phone-wise. As far as what's on the way, like I said last night at the close of the program, we need to do some catch-up work. What with me going down to North Carolina tomorrow, a little story that will that will really should make you sweat. There's a book burning scheduled in North Carolina. Yeah, a book burning. Remind me to tell you about the new 20-minute film, short film that you can watch by our friend Chad Stevens. It's over at e360.yale.edu. You want to see this if you're interested, as so many of you are, in continuing the learning curve about mountaintop removal. Maybe a little something from that person who continues to impress, Neil Gabler, at boston.com. I got this from Dr. Bill the other day. It's worth a listen. Remember how we talked about Rocky Mountain health plans not being willing to cover the big baby? And, of course, they once the national spotlight shone on them, they found the foot of the cross in a real hurry. I love the language from the press release. Today, Rocky Mountain Health Plans has made a company-wide policy change and will now provide health plan coverage for healthy infants regardless of their weight. Well, damn, isn't that good of Rocky Mountain Health Plans. You know, see, that's the nice thing. If we had universal single-payer health care that was sponsored by the government, you know what else we'd have? Have you thought about this? Because this light kind of just went on for me when I was reading that that corporate decision to cover the fat babies. Babies are supposed to be fat. That's how they keep growing. They're born with a store of fat. If you're a mom or a dad and you've had little ones, you know that in the week after their birth, they lose a little weight and then they start gaining it again. That's because by virtue of the glories of human evolution, they come into this world with a store of fat that they can burn until they get used to being out here in paradise. But an avarice-driven insurance company made a corporate decision that they weren't going to cover babies that they determined to be preternaturally large. Ain't going to cover no fat babies. They're fat enough as they are. Well, they... Jesus. And then they put a press release announcing that they're going to cover the large babies after all, as if they are giving some sort of boon to society in Colorado. Screw them. Because this is my point. If we get universal single-payer health care, it will be a function of government. And you know what comes with that? Something really nifty comes with that. It's called equal protection. It's embodied in the amendments to the Constitution of the United States. And it says everybody is entitled to the equal protection of the law. And to both substantive and procedural due process of law. That means that if everybody, for instance, had Medicare for All, H.R. 676, I'm sure you're well familiar with it, talked about it enough, then everybody covered under the same would have recourse to the Constitution, and the government couldn't say, well, I'm sorry, we'll cover the skinny babies, but not the fat ones. We'll cover the happily married women, but we won't cover the ones that have been victims of domestic abuse. We'll cover the women who have their babies vaginally, but we will not cover cesarean sections. Or vaginal birth after cesarean section. We're going to cover those. Now, see, that cesarean section became a pre-existing condition, and we're out. All of that crap goes by the wayside, not as a function of Congress having to jump through an extra hoop and pass another law, but because the law is already on the books, and the book is not a book, it's a pamphlet, and it's called the Constitution, and it trumps everything. and it would stand as the final arbiter of the way we deliver health care in this country. Yeah, one more to chew on. It was nasty enough when they decided they weren't going to cover babies. You know how the right wing likes to go to these teabagging parties with pictures of Barack Obama done up with a little Hitler mustache and some swastikas around him, and the wing nuts are on golf courses in Massachusetts carving swastikas and Obama's name into the grass of the golf course. You know, right? Yeah? They hate the Constitution. That's why a freak like freaks like the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia on the Supreme Court like to envision a static Constitution, because that way you can say, wow, you know, there was nothing like that in 1787, so, you know, forget it, buddy. Hey, you over there, Lily Ledbetter, that got cheated out of wages for 20 years and never even knew about it, we're going to tell you that in 1787 they would have told you that you had to sue the minute you didn't know. We're just gonna make crazy crap up and say that it's because we're originalists. They despise the Constitution. And you know what? You want to know who's closer to a Nazi? A liberal or a right-winger? Shh, don't tell Jonah Goldberg, but the Nazi Party was right-wing. And the Nazi Party liked to get rid of undesirables. What was that thing, paragraph 68? Is that what it was, if I got the number right? That the Nazis used to get rid of undesirables and gay folks and... Made gay men and lesbians wear pink triangles, just like they made Jews wear yellow stars of David sewn on their clothing so that they could be readily identified as an enemy of the Reich. A story for you out of New York. A story of a man named Ian Pearl. To you and I, Ian Pearl would be a human being. But in the world of avarice-driven healthcare, Ian Pearl is a dog. This story deals with Guardian. And they are an insurance company doing business in the state of New York. Ian Pearl is a 37-year-old man with muscular dystrophy. He has a lot of insurance claims because of the way the dice roll came up when he emerged from the womb. Because of things that happened in his genetic makeup for which he was absolutely not responsible. The right-to-lifers of the right wing out there saying, but we gotta have the babies get born! And the insurance company, when the claims start racking up, call them dogs. Dogs, damn it! Dogs! Guardian, in the state of New York, because insurers are legally prohibited from discriminating against individuals who submit large claims. See what I mean? The Constitution would prevent discrimination against Ian Pearl because of his disabilities. But New York has a law that legally prohibits discriminating against individuals who submit large claims. But you know what Guardian just decided to do? Guardian. Huge insurance company. Guardian decided that because of the claims that were filed as a result of medical necessity and the medical needs of Ian Pearl, and Ian Pearl alone, the Guardian would simply dump its entire customer base and quit doing business in New York. I criticized the Washington Times earlier as being a house organ of the Republican Party and Reverend Moon, and I'll eat some of those words because the story was broken by the Washington Times. This is the language from the article. Legally barred from discriminating against individuals who submit large claims, the New York-based insurer simply canceled lines of coverage altogether in entire states to avoid paying high-cost claims like Mr. Pearl's. In an email, one Guardian Life Insurance Company executive called high-cost patients such as Mr. Pearl dogs that the company could get rid of. And then, because Guardian is a private company, when the case went into court, the federal court, lickety-split, ruled that the actions of the company in dumping its coverage lines was absolutely legal. And therefore, on the first day of December 2009, in the year of our Lord, Mr. Ian Pearl will lose every bit of his health care benefits. Understand that in order for Mr. Pearl to remain living on this planet, in order for Mr. Pearl to exercise his right to life in this culture of life, remember when Dim Leader told us about the culture of life? In order for Mr. Pearl to exercise his right to life, it costs $1 million a year. Among other things, Mr. Pearl requires one-on-one skilled nursing in order to remain a functioning member of humanity. But a court has said that because it is a private company, that Guardian can simply get rid of Mr. Pearl. You know, a few years back, and they still like to have an absolute hissy about the tragedy of it, a journalist named Daniel Pearl was murdered by religious fanatics and fundamentalists in Pakistan. In 2009, an avarice-driven for-profit health insurance company in the United States has handed a death sentence to another Mr. Pearl. And because the Constitution cannot tell a private company what to do, because they didn't just dump Mr. Pearl, they just quit doing business altogether. Well then, Mr. Pearl gets to suffer, go without the health care that he needs as his family watches in utter helplessness, and die. He will be one of that 45,000 or so human beings in this country every year who don't die because of their conditions, but die because they do not have access to adequate and appropriate and necessary coverage for their needs. Of all the stories that I've read about all the excesses of the healthcare companies, this thing renders me practically speechless. I don't know how to comment on it. I don't know how to tell you how sick it makes me. while elected representatives continue to prattle on about how we don't need a public option. Mr. Pearl and 44,999 other Americans every year make a slow, tragic, tormented march toward death. Bookend that with the words of alleged Democrat Mary Landrieu of Louisiana. She is vociferously and ferociously opposed to a public option. She says she opposes a public option because it would, and this is a quote, undermine the essence of efforts to create a real market-based private sector model. Jesus and his brother Harry, this woman calls herself a Democrat. So she showed up on MSNBC yesterday, interviewed by Tamron Hall. And she was called upon to explain her opposition to the public option. Well, listen to the words of Marie Antoinette.
Say this as a Democrat. I believe in the private sector. I don't believe in government running every program for everybody. I believe in public-private partnerships.
Do you believe in that polling that says that American people want a public option? Do you believe in that desire from the folks that you and all of the others represent who say that they would like a public option to help offset these costs?
I think when people hear public option, they hear free health care. Everybody wants free health care. Everybody wants health care they don't have to pay for. The problem is that we as governments and business have to pick up the tab, and as individuals. So I'm not at all surprised that the public option's been sold as free health care, but there is no free lunch.
Who said there was, you hateful woman? No one that I know has ever mentioned the universal single-payer health care as being free. We all acknowledge we're going to have to pay for it. Dennis Kucinich, a man who should be in the Senate if any human being ever should. Dennis Kucinich acknowledged 4-5 years ago, we are already paying enough money for universal single-payer health care, we're just not getting it. The money that is paid out to profit-driven, avarice-driven health care every year would pay for single-payer. What it would not pay for is for that loathsome son-of-a-bitch self-made who called Mr. Ian Pearl a dog to be gotten rid of. Dog. A dog. This is a member of the American corporate leadership class. And he just got caught saying what much of the rest of that leadership class thinks. By the way, did you notice the front end of Mary Landrieu's comments? Three words.
As a Democrat, and I'm proud to say this as a Democrat, I believe in the private sector.
As a Democrat. That woman is a Democrat about as much as I am the Pope at Rome. Here's a hint to anyone who's confused. I ain't the Pope at Rome. Democrats care about working people, but you can tell what Mary Landrieu cares about. We in government and business have to pick up the tab. Government and business, baby. What about we the people, Senator Landrieu? What about we the people? Not we the government. Not we the business. What about we the people? We're willing to pick up the tab, Mary. We've never said we weren't. What we the people are not willing to do is have one of our fellow Americans like Mr. Ian Pearl referred to as a dog and then thrown to the dogs. We are not willing. We are not willing, Mary Landrieu. We are not willing. Y'all just want something that's free.
I don't believe in government running every program for everybody. I believe in...
It is not an article of faith. Do you see? There's another example. That single most dangerous word in the English language, you can justify anything you want as long as you say that you do or do not believe it. God damn it, Mary. You were not sent to Washington, D.C. to go up there and believe things. You were sent to the Senate of the United States to go up and learn things and know things and do things based upon reason, common sense, and facts. Facts. But that word is also a bush that craven, cowardly politicians can hide behind because all they have to say, I don't believe. Because if she used the appropriate word, if she used the word no, she'd be in the middle of a lie.
Even government running every program for everybody. I believe in public-private partnerships.
Do you believe in that polling that says that American people want a public option?
I believe in public-private partnerships. We have that now. Really? Is it a public-private partnership, Mary? That resulted in Mr. Pearl being sentenced to death on December the 1st, 2009? Is that what the public-private partnership has gotten us, Mary?
Do you believe in that desire from the folks that you and all of the others represent who say that they would like a public option to help offset these costs?
I think when people hear public option, they hear free health care.
Now she uses the word think. When she's not thinking, I think that when people hear private public option, they hear free health care. No, that is what she believes because she just made that up out of the sickening swill that swirls between her ears and passes for brains. She doesn't think that. She believes that. It is an article of her faith as an elitist, dino, right-winger. That, by God, the people of the United States don't deserve a public option because then they'll be getting something for free and they won't appreciate it. Sweet Jesus, that's straight out of the text of that Al Franken piece, Supply Side Jesus, that we read from the other night. Supply Side Jesus, shouldn't we be giving some stuff to the poor? No, they wouldn't appreciate it. How monstrous. How insulated from common humanity must one be to speak in public like that and think that it's acceptable and normal and rational and reasonable?
There's no free lunch. There's no free lunch.
Even Barack Obama has acknowledged openly, maybe Mary wasn't listening. Did you have your listening cap on, Mary? When he said that a public option will have to be self-sufficient and rely on the premiums it collects? Of course, President Obama also said that that public option wouldn't have profits and excessive administrative costs and executive salaries, which would make it a, his words, good deal for consumers. Gee, that sounds like something we might pay for, doesn't it? Why would a woman, or a man, but in this case a woman, why would a woman talk like that? Why would she say something like that? Well, in this case, the old adage does not apply. The old adage of chercher la femme. Nope, wrong. No, in this case, it is chercher l'argent. Find the money. Mary Landrieu has taken more than $1.6 million from health care and insurance interests over the last few years. One in five of her constituents in Louisiana are uninsured. 20%. 20% of the state of Louisiana is uninsured. But she just told them that to get over it because they just want a free lunch. There are some people on this planet that saying something that crappy to it ought to be within the framework of some religious codes a mortal sin. And saying that to the state of Louisiana, even though there's lots of wing nuts down there, ought to be a mortal sin. Saying that to the people of New Orleans and the bayous who were inundated with the filth and the fetid waters and the failures attendant upon Hurricane Katrina is a mortal sin. But that's okay with Mary. Because, well, shoot, the check cleared. Going to try to sort out this phone issue. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn. On the way, the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. We'll be back.
Get their request to get out of the way. song called Radio Waves. You're listening to Chaos in Los Angeles.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, October 15, 2009.
Bush administration smacked down. Critics of coal mining shouted down. Plus, wait till you hear how one airline is hoping to save on fuel costs.
I'm waiting. It better be good after that teaser.
It will be.
Promises, promises. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Prepare for 6 minutes of green news and snarky comments.
The vanquished vice president doesn't think there's room for debate on climate change. I do. The debate's over. There's no global warming.
Well, which one is it, Sean? Is the debate over or not? This is your Green News Report. The Green News Report is brought to you by VelvetRevolution.us. Join the Diebold Return Our Money campaign, demanding a refund for more than $100 million taxpayer dollars spent by California alone on Diebold's failed and faulty electronic voting systems. Give Diebold your own 2 cents at DieboldReturnOurMoney.com. That's DieboldReturnOurMoney.com. All right, Des, as Republican Chair Michael Steele might say, what up?
Well, Sean Hannity might be interested to learn that the Environmental Protection Agency has finally released a report long suppressed by the Bush administration.
Oh, no, he won't be interested to hear that at all.
Because of its conclusions on global warming and pollution emissions. Back in 2007, scientists with the Bush EPA concluded that greenhouse gas emissions were a serious danger to public health, known as an endangerment finding, and recommended the government begin regulating emissions. The study was ordered by a Supreme Court decision back in 2007 and was submitted to the White House. But the Bush administration White House refused to open the email.
Because they knew what was in it, right? And they didn't want to be accused of having seen this finding, correct?
Right. While the existence of the suppressed report and the unopened email were well known, the report itself had been withheld until now. The Obama administration this year had to go through the whole process again, reached the same conclusion, and has moved forward with the EPA's endangerment finding.
You know, this is incredible, because what that report said was that greenhouse gases are endangering the public welfare. Now, not to go all constitutional on you here, but when these guys came to office, you recall they took an oath of office to protect the Constitution. The Constitution, which calls for protecting the general welfare. And they refused to do it. Sounds impeachable to me. Too damn bad he's not in office anymore, but let's impeach him anyway.
In another strong reversal of Bush-era environmental policies, the Interior Department has blocked 60 oil and gas leases on public lands near national parks in Utah, saying the auction for the leases in the last weeks of the Bush administration was rushed and possibly illegal. In January, a federal judge blocked the leases, finding that the Bush Interior Department had failed to follow its own procedures. Obama administration Interior Secretary Ken Salazar said that most of the leases will be reevaluated, but the areas near national parks, quote, are not appropriate for oil and gas development and should never be leased. A recent investigation revealed that employees with the Bureau of Land Management's Utah office believe that energy concerns should override environmental or recreational concerns, and the national park was not consulted. It was partly the actions of a college student that eventually brought the rushed sale of those leases to public attention. A student at the University of Utah, Tim DeChristopher, infiltrated the closed-door lease auction back in December and bid up the prices of those leases. At the time, he said, he made the decision it was worth it to go to prison for posing as a bidder if it saved the lands from development.
This is great, this kid who jumped in and screwed up the entire auction.
Mr. DeChristopher's trial has begun in Utah. He faces 10 years in prison and up to a $750,000 fine. You can get more information and donate to his defense. We have links at our website at greennews.bradblog.com. We have a follow-up on the scandal of forged letters that were sent to congressmen to trick them into opposing climate and clean energy legislation. A PR firm was behind those forgeries, working on behalf of the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. Well, a House committee hearing was scheduled for today to investigate those forged letters, but it was postponed after the ranking Republican on the committee, James Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin, complained that he didn't have enough time to review the witnesses' testimony.
Is that right? He didn't have enough time. So will they be having this hearing?
Eventually. It's been postponed.
Okay.
That was the raucous scene outside an Army Corps of Engineers town hall held this week in West Virginia to hear public input on speeding up permits for the destructive coal mining practice known as mountaintop removal. Critics of mountaintop removal charged that the coal industry bussed in hundreds of supporters who shouted down environmentalists and residents opposed to mountaintop removal when they tried to speak at the meeting. Today, the Corps of Engineers defended their handling of the hearing, saying the hearing was conducted in an orderly fashion and everyone had a chance to be heard.
Well, that may be, but the crowd of protesters outside jamming people up against the wall at the doors was not exactly orderly.
A Japanese airline is taking fuel efficiency to new heights. Since the weight of an airplane is a critical factor in how much fuel it uses, Al Nippon Airways is asking passengers to do their part in lightening the load by lightening their load. Specifically, they're asking passengers to make a pit stop in the restroom before boarding their flight.
No!
Airlines,
really?
Yes, all the airlines have been trimming weight by various means. But, you know, it's better than discount European airline Ryanair, which is considering charging passengers a fee to use the onboard restroom.
Oh, good Lord. All right. Well, now we know what you have to do while you're waiting for that plane. Read about that and much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your number one Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Wow, it's the second half of the show, not the second hour. So we won't run the third hour intro, and that'll make everything work out right, right?
Okay.
So what did you do? During the break, you know what I did during the break? I tried to sort out what's wrong with our phones, and I'm not done sorting yet. So if you will bear with me, I need to get back to sorting here for a little bit. Oh golly Moses! I'll try to find some sort of interesting music or something for the moment. Just as quick as I can. So, as the old as the old saying goes. Please stand by. We'll be right back. This is The Horn.
Are you? better do what you were told. You better listen to the radio. I wanna fight the hand that feeds me. I wanna fight that hand so badly. They worry about the times ahead, but everybody else is overwhelmed by indifference and the promise of an early bed. You either shut up or get cut out. They don't wanna hear about it. It's only inches on the reel to reel, and the radio is in the hands of such a lot of fools trying to anesthetize the way that you feel. Radio is the sound salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. Say you better listen to the voice of reason. Said they don't give you any choice, cause they think that it's treason. So you had better do as you were told. You better listen to the radio. What if I win?
I'm on a Mexican radio. right round like a record, baby, right round.
placed in here. What better time than now?
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
So I lied about not running the third hour intro. That was before I knew that the phones had gone sideways. Sorry for the 30-minute musical interlude. I hope I didn't lose everybody in the audience. But I understand if I did. But we're back. The phone problem is solved. The phones are live. If you want to get involved with the program, you know how. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, and on your nickel, 304-658-3333. You can send cranky emails about the 30-minute interruption in the program and the fact that I lied about not running the Hour 3 intro to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And you know what? You want to take a guy behind the microphone completely off his feed and just to upset the apple cart? Let what happened 30 minutes ago happen, and then it's over. But it's not over. We're gonna we're gonna get through the hour of this program, and then it is over for me until Monday, and I hit the road tomorrow. Anyway, let's go to the phones. Since they work, let's use them. You use them. You know the number. Learn it, know it, use it. It's probably already just the burned into the back of your brain. But we have Michael with us, Kid A from the chat room, calling from Ohio. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Bob, what's up?
I'm a little flustered.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Had a perfectly good show going along, and then... Yeah, I kept looking over. Do I smell bad or something tonight? You know, phone's not ringing. And fortunately, you tried, and we found out they were down.
It's probably my fault for trying. I haven't called in. I talked you off the air, but I haven't called into the show in, good Lord, I don't know, all year probably. So it's probably one of those Murphy's Law things.
Nah, I don't think you broke it.
The one day Kid A calls in, phone's died. So everybody can blame my bad luck.
Actually, it's some of that clean, inexpensive coal-fired electricity that did it. We had it's kind of disturbing. But what I found out, it turns out we had a power surge that happened a little bit before showtime, and I was outside, so I didn't know it happened. But it ran all the way through our uninterruptible power supplies, knocked out the Adtran unit, which is what brings the T1 into the studio, knocked that thing completely out, and it reset, but it failed to reset one critical setting. Oi.
Sounds like, you're kidding.
Well, you know, obviously, one of the dilithium crystals failed, and you know, Scotty wasn't able to get it back up in time.
Well, I was just thinking, Cole keeps the lights on. God said, let there be light. I guess he didn't say let there be phones. So there's your...
Yeah, right. But that's, you know, that's part of our antiquated electricity grid. And that's why we have to have things like surge protectors and uninterruptible power supplies that suck up all this stuff. Simply because the power company can't even maintain what goes down its lines.
Sure, yeah. Hey, I was just thinking while I was waiting, you had the Rage Against the Machine on, and I was thinking, oh, that's not fair. I have to follow Rage Against the Machine.
You know what? I heard a clip in that. It has to start somewhere. Why not here? That's got the horn written all over it.
What better place than here? What better time than now? I gotta follow Rage Against the Machine. Seriously, nobody can follow them. I don't know if Spike's listening tonight, but I was just we're doing a little email correspondence a couple weeks ago, back and forth, and comparing concerts we had been to in the past, and I was telling him about saw Rage Against the Machine at the Tibetan Freedom Concert in Wisconsin back in, I think, 99. And I already had my tickets, but I guess the tickets weren't selling too well. And so at the last minute, they added Rage Against the Machine. But they didn't give them the headlining slot. That went to the Beastie Boys, which I guess is fair since they organized the festival. But the Rage came on at, I don't know, maybe 7 or something. Then after that, the Beastie Boys played. And then after that, Run-DMC closed the show. And yeah, both Beastie Boys and Run-DMC put on, respectable shows. But Rage just completely owned the evening. And they really should have, been the ones to close it out. But so literally nobody, at least in my experience, can follow those boys. But I'll try. You're right. That is a pretty good song, Guerrilla Radio. It also made me think there's an even better, in my opinion, Rage song about radio, specifically talk radio, at least if I'm interpreting the lyrics correctly. I don't know if you've ever heard this song. If not, I'll send it now.
You dropped out there for a minute. That's another phone problem we're having. All I heard was now.
Oh, okay. I was just saying, have you ever heard a Rage Against the Machine song called Be It Now?
No.
Okay, I'll send it to you later after the show. I don't know. You probably can't play it because I guess technically you could, but since you're on the internet. But it's got a lot of F-bombs.
Yeah, there were a couple in that one.
Well, yeah, but not as bad. I mean, I think that was actually a single, Guerrilla Radio. I don't think Be It Now ever... Well, I don't know. But anyway, it's got a lot of F-bombs in it. it's a brilliant song, and it talks about, at least if I'm interpreting the lyrics correctly, it talks about the origins of radio, and, it even references, G. Gordon Liddy and Ollie North, didn't he have a show back in the, I don't know, 90s or something? The song's from 96, so it's like...
Wow.
It's from, a couple years ago, but...
Yeah, that would be 13 years, and I find that difficult to believe.
Yeah, but I'll have to send it to you. It's a good song. I can't remember the lyrics off the top of my head, but it's just all about how, right-wing radio is just, premised on just fear.
It absolutely is, Michael. And, that quote that we had that Jude sent along last night talking about hate is the easiest thing to tap into inside the human, psyche. And somewhere along the way, the right wing realized it, and they did it. And they have done it to great success. So, the question remains, can we on the left, can we liberals, progressives, decent human beings, how do we counter it? And if it is possible to count, how do we counter it? And then can we? Because, God knows we're trying to here, we fun around, we call some, look. How are you supposed to not get cranky with something like Mary Landrieu's words that I played what seems like an hour ago and probably was? How do you not? And think really, really nasty things about her. Not just hateful things. I mean, go out and get hit by a truck, that kind of stuff. Because
I have some thoughts about that Mary Landrieu clip, but I'll save them for a minute. Check this out. It's some of the lyrics to, I'm not looking them up, I'm just thinking. Some of the lyrics to this Rage song called Be It Man. It's on their album. I think if anyone's looking up, it's from, I want to say 1996. I know it's on their album called Evil Empire. And I just remember the chorus, basically, just turn on the radio, nah, F it, turn it off, fear is your only god on the radio, and then it just repeats. But that's the chorus. And there's a lot of really pointed lyrics in there. And in some ways, I think the song is a little prophetic, because like I said, it dates all the way back to the late 90s. And I knew who Rush Limbaugh was back then, but, I think I did. But other than that, I really wasn't clued into what was going on. And the reason I say it's prophetic is because for a long time, I mean, it's been my favorite song. I would say it's my favorite Rage Against the Machine song. Since back then, since I first heard it.
Can't wait to hear it myself then. Your recommendations carry weight, Michael.
I will send it to you after I get off the phone. I think you might have heard it before, but
I got to tell you, anybody whose musical tastes run the gamut from Rage Against the Machine to Radiohead to Will Kimbrough, that guy's got an eclectic taste, and that's worth paying attention to.
I do have, I suppose, eclectic taste, but I at least the three artists you just mentioned there, I really don't see that much of a. I think it's really easy to draw dots between, say, for example, those three artists. You mentioned Will Kimbrough, and I'll get back to Rage, but you mentioned Will Kimbrough and Radiohead. I'm just amazed. It wasn't Radiohead, when I was at, I saw Will Kimbrough a couple weeks ago in Columbus, and I just happened to be wearing a Sonic Youth shirt. They're like a New York art rock band.
Sure, I'm familiar.
Late 70s, early 80s, and they're still, I'm amazed, they're still one of the most consistent bands. Every album I get, or every album they come out with, I buy it, and it's good. It sounds like a Sonic Youth album. A little different take on their sound. It doesn't. I never feel like I heard it before. They're not my favorite band, but they're just one of the most consistent year after year, decade after decade. Anyway, so I was wearing a Sonic Youth T-shirt, and after the show, Will starts talking to me about Sonic Youth, and like he knows more about them than I do, and I'm just talking with them and. And I'm just, he's got some eclectic taste himself. And, I can remember reading on his blog on willkimber.com, a year or two ago, where he was, talking about Radiohead a little bit. So, But anyway, okay, hold on, check this out. I gave you that one chorus from the song called Be It Now. And I said I thought it was prophetic. The reason I thought it was prophetic because, like I said, it's been my favorite Rage song ever since I first heard it. But I never quite understood why they called it Viet Now. Like, I get, right-wing radio, talk radio, gets people afraid, and it's all based on fear. But I didn't quite get the words. I think the line in the song is something about programmed for Viet Now, as in, like, the radio is, is programmed for Be It Now, and I was kind of, what exactly do they mean? And then as soon as, after September 11th, and then we got into, Afghanistan, Iraq, and I was like, Rage Against the Machine, Be It Now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it was
all that time, the radio was programming the country to just kind of accept that crap. And it's like, I don't know, just when I see stuff like that, you know, a song that, you know, I'm talking about in 2009, but the song's from 1996, you know, I'm still talking about in 2009, the song's from 96, which is when I first heard it, and it took me till 2003 to really finally figure it out. That's a good song, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know. And what you're talking about in classical terms is an epiphany.
Yeah. But that Mary Landrieu clip earlier, was she complaining? I was trying to dial in at the time, so I was kind of, you know, everything was kind of sideways at the phone. But was she complaining something about, you know, did she say something about single payer health care? People think it's a free ride. Or
yeah, people say they want a public option because they think it means it's free.
Well,
that's how stupid we are.
Okay, so she didn't mention single payer. She was just saying even the public option.
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah, even something as fairly weak as the public option.
Yeah,
A, how nauseating, but B, how insulting.
Yeah, I something that occurred to me when I heard that. I don't know if anybody's floated this meme out there yet, but and she's supposed to be a Democrat too, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, when these Democrats and you know, obviously these Republicans and whatnot always complaining about public options, single payer health care. I took a half a day off this afternoon, so just my luck, I was able to tune in to Glenn Beck.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I watched it for about 10 minutes, and then I went and vomited.
Good for you. Get the poison out of your system.
Yeah, I didn't really, but my brain kind of had to. I think he was talking about the White House... not the press secretary, the woman who...
Oh, the director of communications, Anita Dunn?
Yeah. Anita Dunn, he was trying to basically tart her as a Maoist.
Oh, really? We're up to Maoist now?